John Harbaugh questions for, of course, we've got to talk about Dan Pitcher, the Bengals OC. Jim Schwartz and Tommy Rees both getting head coach interviews tomorrow as well. All the names, all the potential situations here as we react to, but it should be noted, we got to get to the Kevin Stefanski stuff, as Kevin apparently and reportedly had dinner with the Giants last night. He is interviewing today, so you get the carryover. The Giants also being very smart in this, not immediately just pivoting to John Harbaugh and treating Kevin Stefanski like he doesn't exist, which I...
Although they kind of did in some ways. Although they've extended their search now, right? Because now I think McCarthy's got an interview on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're opening it up.
Yeah.
Well, also,
it's got to be the analytics candidate.
Well, also, at the same time, kind of closing it as well.
What I like about this is I as soon as I saw the... They were at dinner last night with Kevin, and today's the big interview. My honest-to-goodness thought was, oh, they were at dinner with Kevin when the Harbaugh news broke.
Oh, you know what this is?
Can you imagine how rough that is if you're Kevin?
This is Lane Kiffin courtside with Sam Levitt. As you get the news about the Washington quarterback, yeah. And then you see there's a photo out there where Wayne's looking at his phone, and he's clearly seeing that the Washington quarterback became available, and it's like, but I'm here with Sam Levitt.
Yep.
What's going on?
It's getting real awkward up in here.
Do we need to change this? Does something need to happen? Something different need to happen? That is very awkward.
I honestly do think with all these quarterbacks, Lane is back to his Joey Freshwater days. He's just got too many options. Right? If you give him like, you got to find your quarterback at like Tarleton State, he's going to be great. But if you're like, you can have any of these quarterbacks in this quarterback buffet, he's going to try and take a bite of this quarterback and then this quarterback. And before you know it, Layla Kiffin leaves him again.
They teach in billions. A man is only as loyal as his options, right?
That's true, which I don't believe, by the way.
I don't either. I think about that quote a lot. Yeah, I don't believe it either.
I think that's what rich people say to make themselves feel better for cheating on their spouses.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Axelrod said it, so yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah. Cheating on Malin Ackerman, by the way. What an idiot.
What a dumb move.
Oh, my God.
It's such a dumb move.
Oh, my goodness. They just wrote her off the show. That wasn't nice. Now, all this being said, with Ashley coming up in just about 15 minutes, we gotta do our best here not to relive history.
Okay.
We do. And if you remember, one of the great, I would say, clarion calls, one of the great charges you could throw at somebody after the Baker stuff happened, where Deshaun Watson doesn't do anything in Cleveland, well, doesn't do anything good in Cleveland, and then Baker Mayfield goes down to Tampa and, you know, plays really well and gets to the playoffs a bunch and all that, was if you said anything positive about Baker, it became revisionist history. Ken Carmen of the Ken Carmen Show this morning had something to say, had a forewarning, threw it out there, called his shot with Kevin Stefanski and the idea of him going to Baltimore.
Would fans have a problem if he ended up with the Ravens?
Well, if you didn't think he was good here, don't you want him to go to a rival?
Yeah, but I could still see the same people. There is a group of folks, not everybody, but there is a group of folks who are perpetually upset. I think that they would immediately get nervous about that. Like, I liked Kevin. I still like Kevin. I thought that the run had come to its end, but if he ends up in Baltimore and he ends up winning in Baltimore, I can look at it and go, well, it wasn't a good situation. Can I? Can I do that, or do we have to do the Baker thing with Kevin? You better record everything we're saying, because if he goes into Baltimore some way, somehow, and has success, it's all going to be revisionist history.
If we would have ran a poll at the end of the year, does he need to go? I think majority of people, now would they forget that they voted that way if Stefanski is hosting a Lombardi Trophy in 2 years with Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, obviously they would.
Every generation of sports talk has some level of slanderous term that, if this is said about you, becomes the worst thing you can say, right? Pandering. That was a big thing as you and I broke into this business. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be a panderer, right? You can't possibly, you don't. That's the worst thing to be called. The new thing in sports talk is revisionist history, people. So I want to clearly define revisionist history.
Okay.
If you look at this and say, I don't like Kevin being the head coach anymore because I don't think he's good enough to win in this situation. And then he goes to Baltimore and he starts succeeding, and you get mad that he's succeeding there and feel like the Browns really screwed the pooch. That's not revisionist history. As long as revisionist history is, you say fire Kevin Stefanski, he goes to Baltimore, has success, and you go, I never wanted to fire Kevin Stefanski.
You're right. Yeah, that would be revisionist history. I look at this in a very interesting and different way, I feel like. I'm not scared of where Stefanski goes in the slightest bit. And to what Lima was saying, like, if you didn't think Stefanski could do anything here, then you shouldn't be upset by it. And you're right. I wouldn't be upset by it. I'm not scared of him going to Baltimore, while also understanding I think Stefanski's only as good as the talent around him. My problem with Stefanski is he never made anybody better, but he also really made anybody worse either. And so, like, Lamar will be fine, and he'll be fine in Baltimore. Do I think they win playoff games? No. So I'm really not scared.
So I'm not necessarily afraid, but I do think there's something logical about saying, do you think Kevin Stefanski will win more games in Baltimore than he would in Cleveland?
Is this an obvious assumption that if he goes to Baltimore with that team, he's going to win more games? Like, that's not...
Because what's the knock on Kevin?
That's obvious.
If Kevin doesn't have talent, you're not going to supersede expectations, right?
He's never going to get you anything more than what you have as far as the talent on the roster.
But if the talent's there,
he's going to be able to do something.
And so, like, that's the fear. The fear is not Kevin is, you know, he's suddenly going to turn into Vince Lombardi. It is Kevin could have continued perpetual success there that he wouldn't have here. And meanwhile, you're stuck with like maybe three coaching searches.
The only takeaway would be congratulations. They got him the quarterback that he never had here.
Yeah.
Okay. Were we ever going to get a Lamar Jackson? There's only four of those type Lamar Jackson caliber quarterbacks in the NFL. We're probably not going to have one of those guys anyway.
But again, that's not revisionist history. So, because during the Baker stuff, those guys threw around some heavy-handed accusations about people in Cleveland. A lot of fans got the revisionist history tag. You and I right now, I've decided that we're going to avoid all of this because I have prepared a written statement.
Okay, good.
All right? I have written a statement that I can... We
clarified, though. You don't do better when it's written down. You do better when it's...
I'm more of an improviser.
You're an improv
guy. But in this case, I thought it was... I was going to have it notarized, and then I realized I don't know what notarized.
Remember your 2020s.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't. You tell me about him. I don't remember them at all, actually.
That was a decade ago. I've gotten better on script.
You always tell me when it's on script. Yeah. That's not where you shine, so I'm worried about this for you.
You got to slow down a little bit.
I want you to make sure you don't...
You got to visualize the audience naked. That's another one.
If you mess up some of the words, we might have a chance for this audio then to get some revisionist history down the line.
Well, in fairness, anybody claiming revisionist history isn't really good at deriving meaning from it anyway.
Listen, AI can get me to say whatever I need you to say anyways.
So Allen Iverson?
You just talk. No, not him. Oh, not him.
All right.
A new overlord's grok.
So I'm gonna ask for some space here, because this is me. I'm taking accountability right now in front of everyone and God and the Ken Carman Show.
With Anthony Wima.
Look. I mean, we're killing the bit already. I, Nicholas Maximus Stradivarius Conjunctivitis Ignominious Snoop Aloop Wilson, hereby testify that I am of relative sound mind, slightly decrepit body, and tremendously sloven appearance, do solemnly so swear, damn, the following things to be my true and real opinions on Kevin Stefanski. Article 1, I believe the Browns should have fired Kevin Stefanski last year, and I wanted him fired this year, too. Article 2. I believe Kevin Stefanski to be an average NFL head coach. If you giveth him talent, he can winneth. If you don't, thou giveth talenteth, he will not winneth. Article 3. Kevin Stefanski would have, obviously, more success in Baltimore than he did as the head coach in Cleveland for blatant and obvious reasons. Article 4. I notified Ken and Anthony that I would be needling them about shouting revisionist history every 5 seconds. I subsequently shared that I'd be outright stealing Lima's public statement bit. In my defense, I think this one's going to go better than Lima's Josh McDaniel bit went earlier this week. I hope this is trending on social media so that Lima hears about it like when Bull and Fox had a show. Article 5. The show Frasier is about intelligent characters, but the humor itself is too broad to be considered intelligent. Honestly, the humor, while funny,
is dumb humor.
It's a fine show,
but a bit overrated. Well, hold on. I had no problem with the articles until this point. What is going on?
I hold these opinions to be my truth and nothing but my truth.
It's not how you program a station, though, KCLC.
In the future, I doth a vow to stick to these opinions and avoid any attempts at the greatest slander one can have in broadcasting to thine own profession, revisionist history.
And they had like a cooking show and like a psychology show. It was weird format.
I so swear, damn, to hold my truth and my honor on these matters as I am a gentleman of the fine state of Ohio, and I will conduct myself thusly. Signed, Nicholas Maximus Stradivarius, Conjunctivitis Ignominious, Snoopaloop Wilson, January 7th in the year of our Lord.
Is that your confirmation?
2026, 9:10 a.m. in the morning.
A lot of it's, a lot of articles.
Well, you got, that's how, it's a legal thing. You got to really write it there.
Is it notarized?
Yeah. No, I don't know notaries. Who knows notaries?
That's how you get it legalized.
Yeah. Well, we can get it done after the fact. I've now said it. Mac, are you a notary?
No, my mom is. I can get that notarized for you if you want.
Look, we got a free notary out of all this.
Look at this.
What a deal this is.
Also, does that mean I have to stop making mom jokes?
It would definitely help.
No deal. No deal. No, I'm out. So there, we've got it written in stone.
Okay,
I've given my takes. If, Mac, you want to make sure to save this segment.
What was up with the Frasier one? Where did that come from?
Well, I want to make sure that in the future, if I give this Frasier take, it's not like a revisionist thing. People aren't thinking I'm doing it to like the reboot of Frasier.
I like the reboot, too.
It happened. It definitely happened.
You didn't even watch the reboot.
Nobody did.
That's, I did. I just told you I did. What do you mean?
Yeah, we got one guy?
I did. I liked it. I thought
we
it was
one
funny.
Guy?
Hey, he's in Boston, and all of a sudden his son is taking over the role of his dad and being the, you know, the sports diehard, not as much of an intellectual as Frasier
that
was.
It couldn't be more different.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
He's just like his grandfather, you but
know,
alive.
Yeah, yeah, well, you know, Martin died. It kind of sucked for the show. And then here we go. We got the guy. Yeah. We got the kid back.
But Daphne.
It's a good time.
She's 50 now. We got that going
Daphne's
for us.
Daphne's not a part of the show.
Of course not. She's 50 now.
No, Niles comes on, but Daphne doesn't come on. Unfortunate.
All right. Can we do the best to avoid revisionist history? Have we succeeded as of yet? Would Kevin Stefanski have more success in Baltimore than Cleveland? I think it's okay if you look at this and go, Kevin can go anywhere and have success and it won't bother me.
I think
Baltimore
it's just
might bother
obvious,
me a little bit.
It's obvious that if he goes to Baltimore, whoever goes to Baltimore isn't going to fall flat on their face. Unless this turns into a Sirianni Eagles type situation where it just all the Lamar stuff starts to really come out, and then Lamar at 30 years old already starting to show some signs of slowing down, and then it's just one big downward spiral. Like, there is a chance the person that takes over is buying Lamar stock at the wrong time to be buying Lamar stock, and it does just go downhill.
I wish that was in this damn, I wish that was Article 6, because I could have done the, I think John Harbaugh as a head coach is going to age better than Lamar Jackson as a quarterback. Dang it.
There we go.
Maybe the next.
Well, add it in and we'll get that notarized.
Can we get an addendum? Do I have to write up a whole nother thing, or can we never just, no, we'll do it. We'll figure it out. Ashley Bastock, Cleveland.com. We'll talk Dan Pitcher, Jim Schwartz, Dan Lobby, all the Dans, Dan Menigan in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. He's pro Stefanski.
I don't know what direction he's going to go.
He is.
I'm locked in.
Who knows? I mean, it's been a tough interview to prep for. I will say that.
He always throws us curveballs, too. You
That's
know?
True. That's what we like about it.
In fact, I want to have Matt go back and find what he said about Harbaugh a couple weeks ago. Maybe it was even last week when we asked him about the possibilities of Harbaugh. Mm-hmm. So if memory serves me right, I think he was basically told us we're dreaming and that's it.
Yeah. Well, here's the problem. I don't remember multiple weeks ago. This is the great thing. My brain is like now an Etch-A-Sketch at 40.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh, that's fun.
I might remember a couple individual takes that I've had, but everything else, like, I got kids' names. I remember my kids' names, and you know what? That's a real win for us.
No, we have like an all hands on deck meeting, and you got reminded of it earlier today, and you're like, I get an email on that. Like, did anything happen there? And it's like, you, not only do you have an email on it, you RSVP'd yes.
I clicked yes.
You did the whole everything.
I would say I probably was the first yes in the whole darn thing. But we got a lot of Brown stuff. Obviously, we mentioned Kevin Stefanski interviewing in New York today, but the names coming out, Jim Schwartz and Tommy Rees will interview for the Browns head coaching job. Dan Pitcher. Odd and dirty. I'm trying to say it like Mark Hodges saying it. That sounds very English, so I'm trying to do that. Todd Monken, so many names, so little time. Let's get another one. Ashley Bastock at Cleveland.com on the Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright hotline. Joining us right now, Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I mean, man, with the way this week has gone already, I'm expecting some kind of news to break while we're on the air at this rate.
Honestly, well, you know it's going to break right about the time we actually get a hold of Albert Breer. That's when it's really going to happen. That's when it's really going to go, because that's when it went yesterday. I guess, what was your initial reaction on John Harbaugh, and how realistic or unrealistic do you think that might be for the Browns?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, right? Because I think on the surface level, it's unrealistic. I will say I was surprised yesterday, just like how the news came down. It happened so fast. I mean, it seemed like things were trending that way, just from an outside observer who doesn't cover the Ravens, that it was certainly a possibility, but it was still surprising. I mean, he's been there, what, 18 years? Like, I think when you have that kind of longevity at a place, it's still an element of surprise. And now, when it comes to the possibility of John Harbaugh in Cleveland, I say unlikely on the surface, because you look at the landscape, and I think John Harbaugh instantly becomes the hottest coaching candidate this cycle. He's going to usurp Kevin Stefanski, who I think had the inside track to being that person. But now it's unquestionably John Harbaugh. And you look at the seven or so teams with openings, and I do think the Giants, for multiple reasons, is the biggest slash most attractive job. A young quarterback who people feel pretty okay about. And I think when people look at these vacancies, they think the quarterback situation, you want to be as positive as you can about that if you are a head coach or a soon-to-be head coach that has your pick of jobs. Now, but let's like look at this a little bit deeper. I guess Browns fans, if you're looking for reasons to be optimistic, and I'll preface this by saying this isn't reporting, it's just been me thinking about it the last 24 hours. John Harbaugh and the Ravens last year did want to draft Shedeur Sanders, right? We know that from reporting that came out a few months ago. So they had to at least like him a little bit. So that's thing number one. And number two is just the Harbaugh family, Northeast Ohio, Cleveland connection. We know him and Jim Harbaugh have talked fondly about liking the Browns when they were growing up. We know their parents went on their honeymoon to a Browns exhibition game. Like, there's all these like intangible things that make you start to wonder. I still think, hey, the Browns, John Harbaugh, might be unlikely, but I don't know. Never say never in this league, number one. And there are these kind of like weird little connections that are just enough to make you go, huh, like I wonder, what if, what could this possibly take? What could this look like? And if I'm the Browns, I would be doing, obviously this goes without saying, whatever it takes to try to land a guy, right? Like you have to when somebody like John Harbaugh becomes available.
All right. Well, I mean, I want to see if you buy into this, okay? And if you like it, then just, you know, credit me in the future on it. No big deal. But, like, I don't think it's going to happen, by the way. But, like, where my optimism comes from, yeah, is the idea that Deshaun Watson had 13 other teams that were interested, and he broke it down to a Final Four when everyone said there was no chance the Browns could get him, and the Browns aren't even serious contenders and all this. They landed him. And so, Barry and Haslam have shown the ability to defy all odds. And if they want something done, they can get it done. And so that gives me some optimism there.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, JP, the Deshaun Watson trade and how the Browns executed that definitely framed a lot of how I view covering this team and covering the NFL in general. Like, I always talk about it when we bring up this sort of you can never say never, because not only did people say all those things about the Browns, like the Browns had been definitively ruled out from grabbing Deshaun Watson. They were out of the running. He was not considering coming here. And then they went back at it again with the fully guaranteed historic contract. So we have seen them operate in this space before where they've been counted out and then they get what they want at the very end. So I'm curious how that all could factor into it, you know, and it'll be interesting to see, I think, how this plays out. I think it's still fair to like wonder, hey, this seems like a pretty big long shot, right? But I mean, the Browns would obviously would have to have interest in getting him. Everyone's going to have interest in getting John Harbaugh to their respective teams.
Ashley, does Stefanski to Baltimore scare you?
I mean, I would kind of be shocked if that happened, because like I don't know that it scares me. I guess it does from the perspective of there's a chance at revenge for two times a year. But look, I think it's unlikely because the Ravens need a defensive-minded coach. I actually think the Ravens, for their sake, it's a good coaching cycle to need a head coach for what they need. That defense is a mess. It needs to be remade. And there's a lot of really good, high-profile defensive names still floating out there. Now, these playoff teams, I think teams are waiting to kind of put in their requests, but we're going to see more of that as the weeks go on. Like, to me, when I saw that yesterday, I'm like, man, ironically, Jesse Minner, who comes from the Harbaugh family tree, kind of like makes perfect sense, the Chargers D coordinator, for what the Ravens need. So for that reason, I would be surprised if Kevin Stefanski landed there. But, you know, I think because Browns fans are so conditioned to these things not working out in their favor, and, you know, is Kevin Stefanski going to be the next Baker Mayfield? I understand some trepidation of, oh, gosh, what if he ended up in Baltimore? But I don't think it's very likely.
I talked to a Bengals reporter today, and he made it seem as if Dan Pitcher is above the Browns. What's your read on Dan Pitcher?
You know, I don't think he's above the Browns because we haven't seen Dan Pitcher, like, do everything from scratch, right? I think he's a really interesting name, and especially from a quarterback development standpoint, but I still kind of think he's, like, under the radar. And, you know, that to me is, like, you haven't seen him put it all together yet, where it's, like, assembling that offense from scratch, calling the plays, like, finding your guy at quarterback. Like, you haven't seen him do that. So for that reason, I think there are some teams out there that would be a bit hesitant maybe to take a chance on him, and maybe him and the Browns would be at, like, a perfect spot for what each other needs. Like, he needs more of that experience, and they need somebody to really work this offense. So I wouldn't say he is above the Browns. I think that's some Cincinnati perception of this team that's not entirely correct.
Yeah, they don't have a good perception of their own team, so I digress.
The quote was, we'll absolutely be a head coach one day. He's an idiot if he takes it.
Yeah. Did you reply? You're the real idiot. That's what I would have done. Ashley, this comes by way of one of the great listeners of the station, Roberto Shenanigans, and I just can't find a way to frame it better so I don't have to give him credit. Do you think Jimmy Haslam would be willing to dump Andrew Berry if that's what it takes to get Harbaugh?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I think no, just because of the way Jimmy Haslam talked about Andrew Berry this past week. Now, I thought that press availability was interesting because every positive thing he said about Andrew Berry was all from, like, the last 8 months, right? So I don't know. I mean, who knows what Jimmy Haslam is thinking on any given day? I guess I should just say never, which is my typical answer to those sorts of questions. But it would be definitely, like, a shocking move if that were to happen. And I don't know why necessarily that would be John Harbaugh's condition for coming here. Like, if that was the only thing, that's kind of odd to me. But it's interesting, I still think, from hearing Jimmy Haslam and talking about Andrew Berry's accomplishments and mentioning the draft class and trading for Malik, or acquiring Malik Collins in free agency, trading for Tyson Campbell, Andre Schmidt. Those are all very recent things. So that sort of recency bias, it's very much a what have you done for me lately league. So I don't know, just always be aware of that and the tide, the potential for the tide turning, I guess.
Yeah, I told Coach Riz last night, you fire Berry to the moon if that's what it takes. Like, you can't let Andrew Berry stand in the way of landing John Harbaugh. If he wants to change out the people that everything down to who fills up the Gatorade in the cooler, I'm cool with it. Whatever you want, John.
That guy's been mailing in for years.
I always say that. But poor end of season reviews from that guy consistently.
Yep. I think his name's Jeremy. Ashley, the report here is Jim Schwartz and Tommy Rees going to be getting head coaching interviews for the Browns tomorrow. I don't know how to ask this in a more polite way. Are these courtesy interviews?
You know, I really don't think they're courtesy interviews, especially on the part of Jim, because, you know, we talked about this last week when my Jim Schwartz big feature story came out. Andrew Berry was the one who was so instrumental in getting Jim Schwartz to Cleveland in the first place. They obviously had their relationship from Philadelphia going back that far. So I think, especially on the part of Jim, this is not doing him a courtesy. I really think Andrew Berry and this front office and this ownership group believe he has earned this opportunity. Jimmy Haslam said they absolutely want to keep him in the building. They think he's a great coach. And I think from everything that I know, they also really like Tommy Rees and view him as this young offensive mind that is going to continue to gain traction throughout his career. Now, I said this last week, too. Like, if I had to pick, Jim would be my pick between the two just because of the experience factor. And you do have to wonder, like, is Tommy Rees ready after only 1 year of calling plays in the NFL? And it's not like he's been in the NFL for an extended period of time like Kevin Stefanski was, even though he also only had 1 year of calling plays when he was first hired by the Browns. So I really don't think either are courtesy interviews. I think people in that building are very fond of both guys. But again, Jim Schwartz in particular, the long connection he has to Andrew Berry kind of points to that to me as well.
What name have we not brought up in this interview that you're fascinated by, intrigued by, want to see the Browns give a good look to, even if it's already on the docket that they are giving a good look to?
Ooh, let me think about that for a second, because, you know, the interesting thing with this coaching cycle is, like, there aren't a ton of offensive names that are really popping out. Like, Joe Brady in Buffalo is the one people kind of point to. But, look, I think the thing with Joe Brady is Buffalo's obviously had a lot of turnover with their offensive coordinators in recent years. It's not like he's the guy that found and developed Josh Allen. You know, that development of Josh Allen was really Brian Daboll focused more than anything. But the interesting guy, and I don't know how I would feel about this because I think I would still be pro Schwartz, but I've been writing this, and it's this idea of a lot of these defensive names that people are throwing out, Jesse Minner, Chris Shula, Aden Durdy. I'm still trying to figure out how to say that name, guys.
We are too here. We are too.
He did get an interview, but all of those guys, their defenses couldn't be any more different from Jim Schwartz. But there's one guy whose name keeps getting thrown out there who does run a similar system, and it is Robert Saleh. So the interesting thing about Robert Saleh, too, is we know they brought him in for an interview the last time they were hiring for head coach. And if we remember, Kevin Stefanski, they brought him in for an interview in 2019. Obviously, he didn't get it. They went with Freddie. But then they brought him back. So basically, like, we've seen these guys bring somebody back who they have previously brought in. So I would say keep an eye on it. I would still prefer Jim Schwartz. Like, if you love this defense, want to keep it together, and you're going to hire a defensive coach, I don't know why you just wouldn't make it Jim Schwartz at that point. But it'll be interesting to kind of see what other offensive names emerge. Like, I'm really curious, outside of Todd Monken, who that might be, because I think that's the route in theory they should be going, is someone to overhaul this offense. But I'm also like, can you hire a Jim Schwartz and then just get a really good offensive coordinator that you feel very passionately about? And that's another path I'd be curious to see them take.
It's like the old song used to sing, Ashley, "Try to Catch Me Odd and Dirty." I think we all remember. I remember that song. It was a great song. Many people liked it. Ashley, great stuff. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ashley.
All right. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
No, sold a great joke there. I mean, we're friends here. Ashley continues to join us. I don't see anybody else making the odd and dirty musicality there. Bleep, everyone. You too. You too for that face. Yeah, the pouty bird face. Yeah.
Every now and then you just hang me out. I'm like, we're just going to let this one sit. You can figure this one out on yourself.
Mm-hmm. Ross Tucker coming up at 4 o'clock today. Mm-hmm. We'll react to what Ashley had to say. And Jonathan Peterlin could learn a thing or two from old Mel Kiper Jr. In 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. John Harbaugh is the best coach I know. The best coach I've ever seen. Whatever team he goes to is going to be formidable, and I just hope it's in the NFC. He added,
yeah,
he'll be a head coach next year.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. That's good. He's not taking the gap year. Wonder about that. Uh-huh. You know what? I've decided I want Jim Harbaugh to be my official lifetime hype man. Have you ever heard him talk about Justin Herbert? All he does is talk as if Justin Herbert's the greatest quarterback he's ever seen play. I think he's actually said that at one point, that he's the greatest quarterback his two eyes have ever seen. And then, like, obviously he's going to talk fondly about his brother, but, like, he goes
over... It'd be funny if he dogged him, though.
He goes over the top in such an awesome way that I want to just be in his orbit so he could hype me up, because everyone in his orbit apparently just gets hyped up a ton.
Watch out, or Matt Khalil's ex is going to sue him. I butchered that joke. I did that because it was Matt Khalil that would sue him because he get it talked up too much.
Yeah, it was
however,
bad.
I go back to this. You are correct. I also would like him to. Here's the thing, though. He actually believes it.
At least he comes across like he believes it.
He's a great actor. I mean, he believes it.
The amount of I don't know what he does and doesn't believe, but it seems like every time I hear him talk about Justin Herbert, it's as if he's never seen anybody else play the position.
You know what though?
You think he's that like shell shocked by Herbert? Mm. He might be.
This is going to be an interesting thing to then segue into.
I don't know that he is though.
This is going to be an interesting thing to segue
into. See what happens with this playoffs,
because you're wondering, okay, is Jim Harbaugh really being authentic with how effusive of praise that he's giving?
But I like it, and I appreciate Herbert. And this is why I'd have him as my hype man.
All right.
Because he knows how to give it out. He knows how to sell it. He knows how to do it.
Easy. This is a family show. But while we're talking about effusive praise for NFL quarterbacks, the ESPN had basically a first draft, a first kind of run of their mock draft on their YouTube channel earlier today. And Mel Kiper standing on business still for Shedeur Sanders.
I mean, I don't know what else the kid needs to do, but I've watched every play, every snap of Shedeur Sanders, and he should be proud of what he had to go through and survive. Everything about Shedeur Sanders screams he's the quarterback. Really, when you look at what Shedeur did this year, not having any training camp, with never with the ones, defense, offense, be thrown out there, playing in brutal weather conditions, not in domes. If you're going to sit there and tell me you weren't impressed with the rookie year of Shedeur Sanders, I would say you weren't watching the same game I was.
If you compare that to what Jim Harbaugh says about Justin Herbert, Jim Harbaugh basically has called Justin Herbert a bum. That is some praise there.
It didn't sound too different than what we say about Shedeur. What are you talking about?
That was more than what we've said. He said, what more do you need to see? Consistency. We've talked about consistency.
I don't know that was implying that, like, what more do you need to see? Give him the keys, make him the greatest quarterback ever.
Should we replay the sound?
I think so. Right, yeah, I think maybe I need to hear this again.
I know you're looking at your phone. Can we replay the beginning of that? That's a great shot.
I mean, I don't know what else the kid needs to do, but I've watched every play, every snap of Shedeur Sanders, and he should be proud of what he had to go through and survive. Everything about Shedeur Sanders screams he's the quarterback. Really, when
there we
you
go.
Look at what Shedeur did.
I don't know what more he needs to do, and everything about Shedeur screams he's the quarterback.
He never says I don't know what more he needs to do, but the everything he...
It was literally the first thing he said. All right, Mac.
Run it back.
I mean, I don't know what else the kids needs to do.
Okay, that part was right. All right, good. That was good. Okay. I was like, what part? But you didn't, but the first thing you had said wasn't right, and that's where I got confused.
I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
The whole point is what?
The whole point is that...
That's about as hyped as you can be about Shedeur after all the things that have happened this year. Like people are going to hear that and just discredit Mel Kiper on Shedeur Sanders.
Is Mel Kiper the person most attached to Shedeur having success outside of an inner circle member of Shedeur or someone related with the last name Sanders?
Louis Riddick, unless you think he's...
I think Mel had more of it, though. Mel, on draft night, went for hours.
Days.
Effusing praise about Shedeur and telling everyone that they'd lost their mind and they'd gone crazy and how he was right and they were all wrong. And so, like, I mean, I just don't think he's going to back down to it this quick.
It's interesting because, like, it's weird, dude, because we've said nice things about Shedeur and because we just haven't said he sucks, move on. We, for different reasons, you and I get kind of labeled with, Shedeurian supporters, whatever you want to say. I'm really excited to see what Shedeur can do next year, and I hope it's in Cleveland. Like, I said this yesterday, like, I think the Shedeur experiment this year was a success. Not necessarily how they went about the experiment, but from the Shedeur side of things, he played better than I thought. He played certainly better than a fifth-round pick, and I think people who are just throwing QBR or EPA without the context of the weighting of the Bears game and EPA, or without looking at kind of the diminishing returns around Shedeur and all that, and some of the context on some of the turnovers, I quite honestly think those people are bat bleep crazy. I also think Mel's a little lost in the... I think he's gone a little too far for me.
Well, yeah, maybe. I mean, listen, I wouldn't come out here and say he's the franchise. I wouldn't come out here and say that Shedeur's the obvious next answer to put him in Canton and do all these type of things. Like, no, like there's a lot he still has to do. And the problem that happened this last year, you know, I thought about this the other day. Like, there's got to be a part of Shedeur that had wished that they really did just go Flacco into Gabriel, and he never even saw the field at all in this first season, because this wasn't set up for anyone. It wasn't set up for Dylan.
I disagree. I think he feels. I think, and I, by the way, I think the tape does vindicate him. Don't give me the stats. If you watch the tape, I think he proved he's far more NFL ready and probably should have gotten a better opportunity.
I think he likes the idea that he knows what he has to do going into the offseason. That part I would 100% agree with. Like, he's seen the NFL, he's seen what he has to do, and he knows what he has to work on, and he's the type of guy that will work on this, and he'll get better because of it. But I don't know. This position, I mean, look at like PFF always does their supporting cast rating, and you have the final ranking on it where it puts everything, pass grades in rushing, receiving, pass blocking, run blocking, everything except for passing that accompanies an offense. And the Browns, of course, were 32nd. It wasn't even a question of where they're going to be on this list. They're going to always be 32nd. Like, it was the worst position imaginable, with no training camp, no reps, no anything to just be thrown into.
And then be judged off of that.
Yeah, I wanted him to. I'm talking about now that we've seen everything.
But I think he wanted to. I think he said he wanted to spot to play this year. He got that opportunity.
But now you get a hindsight. And in hindsight, this is what I wondered. In hindsight, does he look at it and say, maybe it would have been better if I had, in fact, just rested this season, and it just went Flacco into Gabriel, and they took Flacco for 9 games, then they went Gabriel for the final 8, and I just got to absolve myself of this being the chance that I get, because there's a real, real world scenario out there that Shador doesn't get another opportunity, and that's the only thing he got.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I feel like the Shador thing was a success. I think if you actually watch the tape, Shador was a much better quarterback than Dylan Gabriel. He was actually a much more successful quarterback from the most important stat, which is, did you win the damn game or not, than any of the other quarterbacks had played this year. And he did it at a time where that team was on the verge of checking out, or not checking out on Kevin Stefanski, but checking out on trying to compete as a team every single week. He did it the hardest part of the season to do it on a losing team. So I hope that Shador looks at this and goes, well, the stats might end up hurting me here or there, but you know what? Damn it. I wanted to play this year, and I put tape out there that says I belong in the NFL and that I'm not a fifth-round pick. Because I think if you still are calling him a fifth-round pick after what you saw, you're either telling me you don't know football or you don't like Shador and just nothing you saw other than 300 yards a game is going to make a difference, or I'm going to go back to one. You don't know football.
Unfortunately, I feel like way too many people are going to fall in that first category, though.
Well, because I don't care about that. I care that the Browns don't fall in that category.
Well, but they might, though. That's the problem, is that whatever this new head coach is, he's going to have his say in the matter. And this is where Andrew Berry's got to stick to his guns and talk about what he's seen and talk about the development and everything else. But, like, there's a real chance that's the only opportunity Shador ever gets that does exist out there. I hope, obviously, that's not true. And I hope it's not the I hope it's also not the equation where he doesn't get another chance for 6 years and then is able to showcase Geno Smith style what exactly he can do. But how the NFL works, they work very, very heavily off unfair first impressions and unfair evaluations, where people don't actually watch the entire games the way that we were watching them and go through the ebbs and the flows, and they just dismiss it at hand. And unfortunately for Shador, he's got to be up against that now.
If Dylan Gabriel gets a crack to start in the NFL again at all, Shador, especially in Cleveland,
I don't think that'll happen. No, I don't think that'll happen either. There's no way a coach comes in here and says Dylan Gabriel's getting opportunities.
I'll actually go one step further. I think if Deshaun gets he's the quarterback next year and everybody else is the backup, if he got the first crack, I think I would
listen
judge
to how Albert talks
everybody
about this stuff, though. And this is how Albert only talks to people inside the NFL when it comes to teams, roster building, how they do all this. They believe that Deshaun Watson could be something way more than they believe Shador can. We disagree with that immensely. Obviously, we do. But this is how they think. And we talked about groupthink in the NFL all the time. And right now, the groupthink on Shador, because of the awful situation he was put in, and I really will fall on that, the awful situation he was put in, it didn't do him any favors.
But the guy that drafted him is still here.
And that's
whether
what
that's
we got to hang on to.
Or Haslam. Is it better if it's Haslam? I think it's better if
much
it's Haslam.
Much better if it's Haslam. We have to pray to the high heavens that it was Haslam. That is the one that loves him. I do think Barry likes him, by the way. I think Barry and Shador, they're in each other's corner in this. I think this is a good thing, ultimately. But it's just, there's no guarantees with this. And it sucks, but that's the reality.
216-474-0092. Where are you on the Harbaugh stuff? And whether you think he'll come here to Cleveland, we're going to talk with that. About that with Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider, in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.